We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today. Welcome to NUFC Matters Talk of the Tomb with me, Steve Wraith, and welcome to Sid. How are you, Sid?
I'm very good. It's nice to see we're living in the same house, Steve.
Well, you know, the show's doing that well. I thought we'd move in together, mate. So, fantastic stuff. Yeah, we've just discovered these virtual backgrounds on here. So, I'll revert to type. There we go. There's the NUFC Matters one. Great to have you on. A pre-recorded show and going out on an evening. I've got a busy week this week. So, thanks for accommodating me, Sid. And if you don't know already, Sid does have his own YouTube channel, Songs from the Attic, 1977. Get yourself over there. We'll be chatting a little bit of music later on in the show. But Newcastle United, 3 wins out of 3 against Fulham, an FA Cup game and 2 league games. Fulham joined Aston Villa as a team that we've done the double over in a strange old season, it has to be said. But a tale of two halves. The first half, it has to be said, wasn't pretty. The highlight of that half, I think, for me was Eddie Howe going absolutely ballistic with his players during the drinks break for Ramadan. From then on, we saw an improvement, a vast improvement. And the second half, I think, belonged to Newcastle United. Should have been 1-0 up from that goal by Fabian Schär. I think Dan Byrne was harshly criticised and penalised, and that goal should have stood for me. But make no mistake, when Bruno is in the mood he was in on Saturday, Newcastle United don't have anything to fear. And he capped off a wonderful performance with a goal on his 100th game for the club and a 1-0 win. And with the results going our way over the course of the weekend, Sid, that puts us sitting pretty again in this battle for the European spot.
Yeah, it's surprising, isn't it? I think it shows you the quality of the league at the moment, isn't it? It really is in like 3 or 4 little groups. You've got the top 3 at the moment. You've then got like a little group, which Newcastle would be involved in the next level. And then you've got the sort of mid-table group, and then you've got the bottom group. So there's like 4 little groups in the league at the moment. And yeah, it's odd. The weekend was very odd, wasn't it? We could have got battered in the first 30 minutes. If we'd been 2 or 3 nil down, I don't think anybody could have really grumbled that much. It was pretty poor, to say the least. Fulham were very good going forward, but they've got nothing. They've got nothing up front. They're toothless. They're very good with the ball and very good at going forward. I mean, Willian was the best player for the first 30 minutes. You know, he's about 75. But he looked very, very impressive. But they had... How many shots did they really have at goal? two or three, and they were all very simple. I mean, they should have scored on one of them very, very clearly when he just literally tapped it back to Dubravka. I don't know if this is true. It was this Dubravka's second clean sheet of the season, and it was against Fulham. I'm not sure if that's true. It seems
possibly,
odd.
Yeah, I think it was.
Odd start, if that's the case. But yeah, Newcastle were absolutely awful. I was about to swear there. Awful up to the Eddie Howe bollocking, basically. And Howe, I think again, was Dubravka as well, seemed, I'm going to use the word feigned an injury, or he was certainly down for quite some considerable time, where Eddie Howe absolutely slaughtered them by the looks of it, and quite rightly so. And they came out a different team. They also came out a different team. They also changed dramatically when Elliot Anderson came on as well. I mean, Willock, we now know he's clearly injured, and that explains an awful lot for his dire performances since he's came back. His first comeback game was excellent, and then after that, he's just went like that, dramatic dip in form. And that explains it all, I think, you know. Hopefully that's the case. And Anderson was terrific again, you know. I appreciate some people asking why he didn't start the game, but three games in a week, you can see why Barnes and him are being looked after and cared for. And if we had a bigger and more in-depth squad, they would have certainly been on the bench and maybe not even played on Saturday, you know, if you'd had a bigger team and you got the likes of Joe Linton and all the rest of them to play. So it was a very mixed performance. As I say, we could have got battered in the first 30 minutes. But after that, Fulham didn't really offer much. Was it a fair result? I'm not sure. Maybe it's a draw, you could have argued. But the first one, the Shires goal should have stood. I thought it was a very poor decision. The VAR, which I've got notes written here. Actually, VAR is one of the things I was wanting to talk about, just in terms of how awful it is. Because, I mean, you looked at the Wolves goal the other day. That was a terrible decision. You looked at the Madison decision yesterday where you should have got red carded for punching the guy in the stomach. Granted, it wasn't much of a hit. It's not like he was hit by Marvin Hagler. You know what I mean? But it was still a red card. I just think the quality of the refereeing is bad. I think some of the decisions are questionable in terms of the so-called bigger teams obviously getting decisions. The amount of decisions that have gone against Wolves this season, it's been scandalous. I mean, they should, thankfully for us, they should be about another 6 or 7 points better off.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for VAR, I feel heartily sorry for their fans, and obviously it's worked out well for us. Otherwise, they would be really pushing for Europe and we'd be playing catch-up a little bit. It's just so badly done. It's also, you've got guys who are officiating at VAR who've never played a game of football. They've clearly never played a game of football, and they're looking for ways to cross goals off. The whole part of football is entertainment. It's there to watch people scoring goals. Yes, there's an art in defending, of course, and we all want to see it, and we don't want to see it being sort of removed. But at the end of the day, we pay money to go and be entertained. And they're taking away some of the entertainment factor by the fact that you can't celebrate a goal. You can't. There's times when we score a great goal and go, oh, right, well, we'll wait a minute before we can jump up and down. That's not right. It's really not right. It stinks. And the officiating is so poor. I personally think that each panel, each VAR person, they should have somebody who's impartial for each game, who's been a professional footballer or who's been involved in the game to a certain high level, you know. Male or female, I really don't care. But as long as they've played the game and they understand how it works, then that's fine. And that goal would not have been struck off with regards to Dan Byrne, because what did they do? They slowed it right down to the end. You don't play football in Steve Austin slow motion where you're doing like that, you know. You don't do that. So they've taken it down to the point of a ridiculous scenario where you're analysing every minuscule detail, and it's spoiling the game. It's absolutely spoiling it. And if you have a pro on there, they would have said, right, okay, he's a little bit tough on the challenge, but it wasn't ridiculous and it wasn't unnecessary and it didn't prevent the goal. Absolutely fine. Let it go. And It just stinks. I know Gary Lineker's talking about the idea of bringing in the opportunity to do what they do in cricket. And that's, I can certainly see that as well, you know, in terms of an appeal process. But it's got to change. The referees have got too much power and they're spoiling the game. They're absolutely spoiling the game. And it just, as I say, the fact you can't celebrate as a fan anymore just stinks. And they're not even applying the letter of the law properly. I mean, there was a challenge yesterday in the Man United game. I forgot his name now, the Brazilian lad. He flew through the air and tackled one of the Liverpool players. He fouled him. It was a red card. Both feet were off the ground. Both feet were off the ground and he's flying through the air. If that's not a red card, what is? You know?
Yeah, is it fair to say the VAR is going to balance out at the end of the season? I mean, that's not what it was brought in for. But
it's not for Steve, is it? It's not because, as you say, Wolves aren't going to suddenly get 7 or 9 points back by the end of the season. And they go, oh, well, we've scored there. Then I don't see it happening. So it doesn't balance out. And it's clearly favouring certain clubs. It really is.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, you have your fair share of decisions go against you. But that's what I mean. You just wonder whether, you know, it would be interesting to see the stats at the end of the season, you know, whether it does balance out, you know, for and against. But Wolves stands out, doesn't it?
Last year, if you remember rightly, I think it worked out Newcastle were 1 point down, according to the VAR stats.
Yeah.
Liverpool were 10 points up. 10. Yeah. You know, that's not a small amount.
No, it's not.
You know, and that made them qualify for Europe then. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 points is significant. And that's just wrong. That's just absolutely wrong. I'm sure it was 10 points. It might have been 9, but it was nothing less than that. And that's just absolutely farcical. It's just ruined it. I mean, the Everton game for a second there. Tarkowski should have got sent off for that challenge on Jacob Murphy.
Yeah.
It was an absolute disgrace. I mean, I was watching it in the stand there at the time, and I looked at it and I thought, oh, that's an absolute shocker. Professional foul raked down the back of his... down the back of the ankle. There's no attempt to challenge the player. He was going for the man. That should have been a red card. It was a terrible challenge. And Murphy hobbled off. I suspect he wasn't fit at the weekend for it. And he played appallingly, by the way. But I will give him a bit of leniency and say that challenge was so bad, I probably should have written him out for a week. You know, it was an awful challenge and the referee did nothing about it. Did he give him a yellow card? He may have done. But it was a straight red, you know, it was a straight red. So the refereeing quality in this country at the minute is at an all-time low. You're thinking they can't go any lower, and then the next season rocks up, and you think, oh, my God, this is even worse, you know.
Interesting you brought the stats up from the game at the weekend. 14 shots on target, only 5 for Newcastle. Fulham only had 4 shots. 4 shots on target, so it wasn't a big game of that. They had a better possession rate, 67% to 33%. A lot of that probably in the first half, it has to be said. But you score the goal. That's what counts. And Bruno's goal was a good one. He had a great performance. He's just got better and better. And when you think about it, I think he's played something like 100 games in 107 possibles, I think Mitch mentioned on the show the other night. That's incredible, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
It's fabulous. He's been absolutely magnificent. And he may get into my all-time Newcastle 11. That's how good he's been. He's been absolutely superb. And he seems to be getting better. And I like the fact that he's got this discipline thing going on as well, because it's actually reining in part of his game a little bit, you know, and it's actually made him a little bit better, in my opinion. You're not getting that hot-headed aspect to his character, which can be a little bit of a flaw.
Yeah.
He's looking terrific. He's really, really looking good. I thought the goal was great. Elliot Anderson's flick was brilliant, like, you know, and then the Barnes' pass was superb. Really good. Barnes has come on and looked really, really lively. Gordon was terrific in the game. There were some big standout performances. I thought those four in particular were very good. And Dan Byrne was magnificent. Is it a surprise Dan Byrne has looked superb in his last two games playing centre-half? Not really. That's it. That's his position. He ain't a left-back. He's been poor, let's be honest. He's been very poor, actually, as a left-back this season. Not last season, but this season. But put him in centre-half and he's a different player. He looks fab. He looks absolutely superb. And dare I say it, these two games so far, he's looked much better than Botman's been. I mean, I add the caveat there, of course, Botman's been playing with an injury, so I'll just put that out there. But he's looked much, much, much more reassured and just better, playing in his natural position and doing what he does. That, to me, yes, Newcastle need a centre-half. Unfortunately, we need probably two of them. But, it's, you know, we've now know we've got him and we've got Shaw. You know, that's quite a bonus, I think, you know. And we'll need to go and get two in the summer. Certainly one who could maybe double up as a left back as well, and certainly one who's a solid, straightforward speed merchant. Hopefully, I keep seeing it as a centre half as well.
Another solid performance from Anthony Gordon as well, who came back from his one match suspension.
Absolutely terrific. It took a bit of time, 30 minutes, as I say, Eddie Howe, to sort of get into them. But after that, he was brilliant. He just tore that fullback on the right back apart. And then they switched him to the right hand side. He did the same there, and I loved his Steve Coppell type cross when he just got past the man and he just floated it. Oh, lovely ball, little floating over ball. It was excellent, you know, absolutely terrific for the goal that should have counted. I thought was, you know, it was a great cross, should have counted. But yeah, overall, very pleased. 7 points. I think we would have all taken it. Nobody would have thought it would have been this way around. I think I was thinking we'd maybe get a point at Fulham and would have beat Everton. We should have beat Everton, to be honest, apart from that stupid challenge towards the end. We should have beat Everton. The Everton game was disappointing. I know everyone was saying we played superb. From when I sat in the stand, it didn't look that great to me. I thought we just played all right. I thought we didn't shoot enough against their goalkeeper, who statistically is one of the worst from outside the box. He's great in the box and he had a very good game. The one-on-ones, he was magnificent. But his record outside the box is terrible. I think it's something like a couple of seasons he was beaten the most outside the box, more than any other keeper. So have a shot. Just take shots. You know, sometimes Newcastle play a bit too tappy-lappy and they just want to sort of score a perfect goal on occasions rather. That's why I like Murphy. Sometimes he'll just shoot from anywhere. And you just want to see that, though, because it does sometimes happen and it goes in. So you want to see that. So, yeah, mixed. But 7 points would definitely take it. So I'm genuinely pleased overall. Very, very, very pleased.
Eddie Howe picked his time to have a go at the players. And there's a lot to be said for a manager who doesn't show his emotions that much. And I think that'll have had a real effect because I caught the interview he had on Match of the Day when I watched it the next day. And he more or less said, he was asked about it. And he just said, you know, the players weren't doing it and they needed to be told. And, you know, he said, I can understand certain players. He's obviously pointing maybe to Sean Longstaff there, who's been playing playing with an injury. But, you know, he just says it needed to be said. And fair play to him. You know, when a manager who's usually placid and calm and not seen to let his emotions take effect, for him to come out and really go at his players, it got the desired effect.
You've got to keep your rollickings to a minimum. Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, you lose all the effect. If you're one of these people who just constantly has a go at it, then you've lost all the power and all the effect. And if you do it very rarely and very occasionally, then as a headache there, yeah, then you, previously you would have, you will have that effect. Okay, keep it rarely, and when you do, then you will. And Eddie Howe as a football manager, it works really, really well because it's so unexpected, and it has so much more effect, as I say, than somebody who's going to go nuts on a pitch. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. A terrible example on the pitch with Phil Brown. Remember that when he kept the players in the box?
Oh, yes.
I mean, that was appallingly bad, wasn't it? You know, and it was all about, look at me, look what I do. Howe didn't do that. Howe did what he had to do because he had to. And he clearly doesn't go overboard, which is exactly the way you should be if you're a manager. Don't go over the top. Wenger's a perfect example. Wenger clearly didn't go nuts, but I guarantee when you speak to the players, he would on the odd occasion do it. And you know why? Because they mentioned the odd occasion. The odd occasion is the way to do it. Keep it up to the odd occasion and it has far greater power and effect upon the players than some nut job who's either trying to show off to the crowd or who overuses that situation as well. I mean, you could argue that Ferguson overdid it. You know, the fact that he's renowned for the hairdryer treatment. I don't think you'd get away with that these days as a manager now. I personally don't think you... I don't think any manager would be able to get away with that on a regular basis now. It just wouldn't work with the more modern type of footballer who you could argue is a little bit softer in terms of being able to put up with that. Don't get us wrong. I don't think you should be having to be put up with somebody shouting in your face constantly either. I think that's unacceptable as well, may I add. But on occasion, to the team, having a bit of a go every now and again is absolutely fine, you know. As long as context.
Yeah, Jim Smith, renowned for chucking teacups around dressing rooms. a few years ago, I did a manager's night. This was the lads who came, managers and ex-coaches. And we had Jack Charlton there. We had Keith Birkinshaw, the greatest manager we never had, is the way a lot of people would describe him.
Yeah.
Gordon Lee, sitting on my left-hand side there, alongside Willie McFall. And, of course, now the late Joe Kinnear, fresh with a drink in his hand there. We lost Joe Kinnear this weekend, 77. Quite a character in football, Sid. Not somebody who, made a great name for himself in Newcastle. I mean, he probably would have done okay, but he ended up having health problems, and you know, then he was taken away, moved upstairs, and that was that part of that Mike Ashley era. But hell of a career. And hell of a sportsman, hell of a footballer, and another player that leaves us after battling dementia.
He was an excellent footballer, wasn't he? He was an excellent footballer at Spurs. He's the Spurs fans were all on Twitter yesterday saying what a great player he was. And of course, he got manager of the year at Wimbledon, which people seem to forget. I think it was 94 he got manager of the year. So he did a really good job at Wimbledon. I mean, obviously less so at Newcastle, let's be honest about it. And I can't remember when he came. I can't remember when he came as manager. Obviously, it was under Ashley, but
he left in 2014, didn't he? I mean, that was, you know, from his perspective, he'd been interim manager at Newcastle between September 2008 and February 2009. He came in after Kevin Keegan left.
And then of course he was diagnosed with dementia. I think 2015, something like that. It was a long time to have it as well. I mean, you wouldn't wish that. My mother's got it, so you wouldn't wish that upon anybody. You know, it's just horrible. Horrible. So yeah, just sort of send condolences to the family and that, you know. Obviously, yeah. He's a great footballer, Irish footballer as well, of course, as well.
Fascinating career. He actually won the FA Cup, the League Cup, and the UEFA Cup as a player with Tottenham. Managerial career with Luton, Nottingham Forest, and of course Wimbledon that you mentioned.
I think he just joined Spurs just after they did the double in 61-62. So I think he came in just after then, probably along with Terry Venables and all of that era of footballer, because Venables just joined Spurs just after they did the double as well, as did Jimmy Greaves, actually, ironically.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's quite a team when you think about it.
They had a hell of a team.
McFay and all those players and Blanche Flowers, superb team, actually, United. And, of course, Pat Jennings.
Yeah.
Who was possibly, certainly in the top three goalkeepers I've ever seen. Incredible. Yeah, good team. Yeah, obviously a very, very good player to hold his position for that long in such a good team. So, yeah.
Couple of other points just before we have a quick break and then join the musical stuff with Rob. We've got Yankuba Minteh, who is doing so well on this on his loan at the moment. He's on fire. He was in the starting lineup for Sunday's home meeting with Ajax. He, of course, is on loan at Feyenoord in the Eredivisie. And he set up the opener and scored the second and the fourth goal in a 6-0 win. He was substituted in the 76th minute to a rapturous standing ovation. And then he was mobbed in the street as he left the ground.
I've seen that, on Twitter,
Only 19 years of age. He's now reached double figures in all competitions, 9 in the league, and the other goal he scored was in the Champions League. This kid's got to stay with Newcastle next season, hasn't he?
I think so, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And what's lovely as well is a loan move that's worked. Therefore, if we can build a relationship with them, that will be fab. If we get new young kids in and we can loan them out to a top, top team like that, absolutely superb. That works for both parties then. That will work out really, really well. Really, really well. He looks lightning. I mean, he looks super, super quick. I mean, we've got some real speed merchants at the club at the moment. We've got Murphy, who's very, very fast. We've got Gordon, who's lightning. And this kid looks possibly even faster. And Tonali as well, of course, whenever we see him again. But, yeah, this kid looks super, super quick, knows where the goal is, and he's clearly developing now, because this isn't just a one-off now. This has become a regular occurrence in scoring goals and laying goals on. Whereas before, the report that he got was he was like a headless chicken. He'd get the ball and just sprint down the line, and he didn't look up. And now he seems to be sort of really developing his game. He's not going to come to Newcastle as the full package. And I think you have to accept next year, if he starts, he will make mistakes, but he will also do stuff that other players can't do. And that's exactly what we need to be sort of nurturing and bringing in. It's a bit like the situation with Hall at the minute, isn't it? He made mistakes at the weekend and he got skinned a few times off their really quick winger. But you have to accept that. You've got to make mistakes to learn. That's the whole point of football and in life, to be fair. You know, you've got to make mistakes. Otherwise, you know, you can't do anything. You can't benefit. You can't learn. So, yeah, Minty will make mistakes, but he looks really exciting. And for next season, I would envisage him as a super sub. 70 minutes. Bring him on for the last 20, 25 minutes. You've got the speed merchant bombing down the wing. And you've got Gordon on the other side. That could be brilliant. You know, that could be really, really exciting. Something really different, yeah.
Maybe he's then saying Chris Riggs from Sunderland, send him across to Feyenoord.
Absolutely.
See how he does, and then bring
absolutely.
Him back.
Absolutely, absolutely. That would be absolutely perfect. I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Yeah. That would be so knocked them, wouldn't it?
Oh, of course it would. One sour note over the weekend was that the police have finally confirmed that there'd been a burglary at Alexander Isak's house on Thursday last week. There'd been a lot of rumours circulating on WhatsApp and other social media platforms. And we don't know the full extent of it, but they have gained entry to the property. They've took a vehicle from the address where the vehicle was later found abandoned in the Dissington area, and the occupants had fled the scene. So disappointing news that. And I think the worry I've got, obviously it's not nice for Alexander Isak to go through, you know, a similar thing that Joe Linton's been through. And, yep. You know, there's been allegations potentially that there could have been someone else or, you know, another player that's had the home target as well, although that hasn't been confirmed. You know, this isn't good footballers talk, and you wouldn't like to think this would put people off coming to Newcastle.
No, because if you remember rightly, Ginola, that was part of the reason why he ended up moving in the end, wasn't it? His wife kicked off, understandably, don't get me wrong, for having been burgled, you know. There's understandable. And I mean, Liverpool went through a big spate of it as well, didn't they, a year or two ago as well. So gangs probably targeting certain footballers, knowing when this, that, and the other away. It's not hard in some respects. You'd have thought they'd all be secured up, mind you, with gates and all the rest of it and cameras. You would have thought that would be part of the deal. And I mean, you could imagine that they could even chip together and have two or three guys on security and within certain areas if it needs be, comes to that, you know. But that's not really the point. You shouldn't have to live your life like that, you know. That's clearly wrong. So hopefully they get arrested and get charged without a doubt.
Okay, we are halfway through the show. Time for the ads. We'll be back with Rock and Rob after this. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Email info at mrvickys.co.uk or telephone 01768 210 102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email info at unitedgrouptravel.com or phone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen, and a membership card, and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email John at nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now, and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the matchday bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other podcast providers. We also do events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from Ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me on the North East Footy Breakfast Show live on Toon Radio weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers and the toonuk.com. And it's that time of the show when we hand over to Rock and Rob. How are you, Rob?
I'm good, Steve. How are you? And how are you, Sid?
Very good, mate. Good to see you.
Yeah, good. Firstly, before I go, I'd just like to thank Sid for reawakening sort of music I had in the 90s. So I bought these. I've never had them on vinyl before. So it was this one.
Oh, yeah.
And...
oh, great album, yeah. Attack.
So thanks for that, Sid. I did listen to them at the time, and obviously your influence drove me towards buying them. So today is we're going with Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet. It's taken me 2 weeks. I was going to do it last week, but I found it. I couldn't. There's 23 songs on it. I couldn't justify listening to it half a dozen times and doing on it. I'm still not going to do that. What I'm going to do is just highlight the singles that were off it, because I cannot justify, you know, this was like a lifestyle choice for a lot of music fans being into hip hop at the time. So yeah, I've listened to it a lot. Naturally compared it to NWA, which Steve recommended that I listen to. Absolutely brilliant. I was very, very surprised how much I like this. So this was 1990, let's say it's Fear of a Black Planet. It's a third studio album. I always find the third albums of any band are a test. I think the first album, everybody buys it. Is the second album good as the first? And then there's a third. So this was on Def Jam Recordings, and I believe this is the sold the most sales on Def Jam's history on the label. So the singles I'm going to cover is Fight the Power, Welcome to the Terrordrome, 911 is a joke, Brothers Ain't Gonna Work It Out, You Can't Do Nothing For You Man. So this, the band was formed by Chuck D. You also had Flavor Flav, DJ Lord, Professor Griff, Terminator X, and the Bomb Squad. So it's opening with Fight the Power. Now, I do remember there was a guy who used to sort of, you know, go out drinking with, and he used to have his T-shirt with a big massive clock on it, and Flavor Flav, Fight the Power, and I never understood it. I was never into that at the time. But yeah, it's a classic top drawer hip hop masterpiece for me. And it's like education and entertainment, this one. Really, really banging beat on this. Flavor Flav, Chuck D together, absolutely sublime. Really hard hitting lyrics. It's a great, the video's really good too. It's like an on street video. Love Chuck D's cool sort of natural vocals as well. And it's actually like a fine piece of art, this song. Stood the test of time for me. And you got Welcome to the Terrordrome. Again, brilliant. Really nice, like a horn section opening this one out. And then it comes on, this is a journey into sound. Old school scratch in, very hypnotic, sort of like a trance backing effect on this. Good shakers, nice snare production on this. It's bang on. I think probably justifiably the hardest sort of hip beat ever recorded. I think it's absolutely smashing. It's solid. Samples from the Temptations are on this as well. It's a brilliant Bomb Squad instrumental version of this as well. I did listen to it. It's absolutely brilliant. It's really a ferocious song. Great, though. It's really, really good. Then you've got 911 as a Joke. Just opens up with Hit Me. Open it by Flavor Flav. He does remind me of Eazy-E. Now, I can't help it. I've only ever listened to NWA and his Public Enemy album that I've got just now. And I hear like Chuck D reminding me of Dr. Dre, the Ice Cube as well. I can't, it's just what I pick up on. It's a busy song. There's a lot going on. Top draw production again on this album, especially this song. It's a bit of warning to the unaware. Really, really good video. Flavor Flav's dancing is something else. It's pretty funny. And I have been doing it about the house. It's sort of like absolute legendary hype man. You've got the Mondays, you've got Bez, and definitely you've got Flavor Flav with Public Enemy here. You've got Brothers Gonna Work It Out. It's again brilliant, outstanding intro. I hear bits of Portishead on this, strangely, bit of trip hop feel again. I think this is my favourite song on the album. It's insane, that rock metal sort of distortion guitar effects on this, nice texture and guitar on it. Old school hip hop beat again. It's very hypnotic. A single note key part throughout, it just drives the song, just sits underneath it. It's just brilliant. It's really, really hypnotic. It gets your mind going. Really nice smooth vocals again from Chuck D, but it's quite a heavy tune. Really good song. And finally, it's Can't Do Nothing For You Man. Again, Flavor Flav takes the lead on this one. It's got a really good feel-good song to this. It's sort of commercial sounding. I definitely get this like a punk element to Flavor Flav, especially stands out with that. It's a bit angst. Outstanding lyrics, tongue-in-cheek. It's laugh at the end of this as well. It's, I think they've just caught that in situ or whatever. It's just like infectious laugh at the end of it. And yeah, Steve, you put up a picture of Anthrax. They've done a song called Bring the Noise. They still do that. They played it 4 years ago. Yeah, with Chuck D comes on with Anthrax. They still play it. And I remember hearing that at the time. So, I mean, I was sort of learning different styles of drumming at the time. And that was one of the songs I was trying to pick up on. But they still do it. It's just absolutely outstanding. Anthrax, another thing about them, allegedly when Anthrax, like the chemical, whatever it is, happened, they said to the band Anthrax, you're going to change the name. And they said no. They got the name first. Allegedly, I don't know. Seemingly Anthrax got the name of the band before Anthrax was what it was. So it's absolutely outstanding. There's one standout song for me, and it's very strange. It's called Interlude. It's about 6.5 minutes long. This could easily have been in my favourite zombie horror film, the original Dawn of the Dead, Italian band called Goblin or Goblins. This could easily have been in that album. I think it was mid to late 70s. This could have easily have been in the album, and it just sort of threw me. But this album, it's got absolutely everything. And I can't help comparing it to NWA. I think NWA have got more humour about them, more tongue-in-cheek, more slapstick approach in a way. Public Enemy, definitely more aggression, hard-hitting. There's no messing about. But I like the variation between the two of them, but total respect. Like I say, I never thought I would ever listen to sort of hip-hop sort of music, but I absolutely really, really loved it. It was really, really good. It's going to get a 9.5 out of 10 for me. And before I go, my little pieces of memorabilia is, you like this one, Sid. It's Ecstasy, Oranges and Lemons.
Oh, class, yes.
That came out in the variation of three-inch CDs.
Oh, yes, I've had a few of those. I've never seen the Ecstasy one before.
And I also got this signed by Colin and Andy Partridge. It's brilliant.
It is. Put
in many cupboards. It's a lot of stuff from like Swindon Town Hall, a lot of demos. Absolutely love it to bits. There's so much on that. It's absolutely stunning. I love it. Absolutely amazing. But listen, Sid, thank you for giving me the little pointer into trip hop. I also ordered Portishead Live at Roseland. It's coming out this month.
It's an excellent one. Album.
Red Vinyl. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had the DVD when it came out, so I've ordered that. So yeah, still setting up a music room. So got all these new vinyl to listen to. So yeah.
By the way, it is looking good, by the way, this music room. It's like walking into Sid's shop back in the day. I've got to be honest as well, though. I bet you haven't. Have you got a copy of this?
Yeah, it's quite good. It gets stuck in the back of your throat, the sort of lot of those songs.
Oh my God. Good job. This is an adult show. And you sent us this as well. Give up the ghost. Great. Is this the new band, Shot?
Yeah, it's the first one with Johnny's beside me, and during that he said, why does nobody smile or laugh? So I think we're going to get another couple of pictures, but I just wanted a picture with Johnny, and that's our backdrop there. Yeah, so Give Up the Ghost UK. So we're getting ready to start gigging soon this month or next month as well. So it's all good.
Sid, what have you brought us this week?
I have brought the incredible album Sound Effects by The Jam. It's just absolutely top draw. So affects is the verb, and of course sound does affect a person rather than effects, which is a noun. So yeah, it's just an incredible album, the fifth album that The Jam released. While I was massively influenced by sort of post-punk bands at the time, like Gang of Four, Joy Division, Wire, all those terrific acts, and of course as well as stuff by the Beatles, of course, especially Revolver, which we'll talk about in a sec. Just every track on it is an absolute banger. I mean, one of the greatest openers ever with Pretty Green, which is just an incredible song. I love the bass on it. The chorus is just magnificent. And of course, it's about money and about pound notes, which nobody knows these days. If I said to my girls, oh, here's a couple of pound notes, they'd look at it like it was a nut job. So yeah, it's just brilliant. We've then got songs like Monday, which is wistful, but I'm Different Now is just a great power pop tune with a guitar. I'd love to see him do more stuff like that again. Now, he occasionally does the odd track, but I'd like to do more of a consistent album. Set the House Ablaze, I think, is probably my highlight on the album. It's got an incredible guitar riff that was later ripped off, or heavily influenced, should I say, by Block Party. Start, which they massively borrowed from Taxman by the Beatles, if you've never heard Taxman by the Beatles and you hear Start, your eyes open, I think is the phrase. That's Entertainment is one of the greatest lyrics of all time. It's up there with the likes of Ray Davies and Pete Shelley in terms of a kitchen sink type lyrics. It's just magnificent. Side two is brilliant. Dreamtime Man in the Corner Shop, very catchy. Music for the last couple I absolutely love. It's really sonically superb. It's almost got like a spacey sort of post-punk style feel. Boy About Town, cocky and great. And occasionally I think he has done this one. Scrape Away is my other big favourite song. It's a really bleak thing, really catchy chorus. Absolutely fantastic way to finish the album. The American versions have got Going Underground and Dreams of Children on as well, which is fab. It is just an incredible five-star album. We do have a show, by the way, on my channel, On The Jam, which Steve features on. So Steve Wraith's on there. And if anybody remembers Kirk from Pet Sounds, Kirk, he's a top, top man. And Kirk's on it as well. So it's got the three of us on there. When we all have different albums, actually, at number one.
Yeah,
so
we did. It's a lot of fun, that. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, quite interesting. So we'll have to do the top 10 songs. Book-wise, I've gone something slightly different. I've gone with Alan Johnson's book about when he was sort of young. It's called This Boy. So Alan Johnson was the Labour MP. I think he was Home Secretary at one point as well, if I recall rightly. But it's actually, it's good, but it's actually a really good chronicle of the times in terms of living in absolute poverty in the 1950s. He's a young lad who did really well in life, got into a decent school. And bizarrely, in the school he was at, somebody had most of the sports records for sprinting, for various athletic things. And that young lad happened to be Malcolm McDonald, bizarrely. So he was in the same year as Supermac. And he just talks about his sport and prowess for a little bit and seeing how incredible he was. But Alan Johnson himself comes across as a really nice guy. He wrote a follow-up to this when he was a postman as well, which is really worth reading. Just terrific. Really, really good book. Very sad, tragic at times, actually. and horrific in terms of the poverty aspect of it all. Great read, really good read. So there you go.
Great stuff, as always. Plenty to get your ears into or your eyes into with the music and the book.
Hey.
Rob. Oh, Rob, what have you got there? Well, he's got a pound.
Is that a pound note?
Yes,
yeah. It's in the wallet. It's still in the wallet.
He's still got his christening money. good stuff, mate. Great to have you on, as always. Look forward to what your review is next week. Have you picked it out already, Rob?
Yes, I have, and it's a band that you mentioned recently, and I've seen them in 1992.
Oh, right. Okay, there we go. Well, he's left with a bit of a teaser for next week. Look forward to that, Rob. We will see you next week. Take care, mate.
Okay, guys.
Cheers. By the way, well done to Gateshead. Well done to Gateshead.
Yes. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
You've got to the final. So this is the second year in a row, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. And if my figures are right as well, potentially if you get to the playoffs, you could be one of the first teams ever to go to Wembley twice in a week.
That's true. They've moved the date because something to do with the trains or the tubes in London as well, round about then as well. But I don't know, but it's brilliant. I mean, I think there was 3,500 at the game at Altrincham at the weekend there. So they're playing tomorrow, massive game tomorrow. So. I think there's 6 games left, but it's brilliant. It's really exciting watching it. It's really good. And I mean, not a lot of people know, but I'm Gateshead born. I'm from Bencham originally, so I've never forgot my roots.
Great stuff. Ex-Newcastle player Rob Elliott having some success at the Tynesiders. Good luck to them in the final, and let's hope they get promoted as well. Rob, thanks very much, mate.
Take care, guys. Cheers.
Take care. Can I just add there, they changed the game because of the train strike, but Newcastle play bloody Brighton away. Train strike on, and they still make.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
make it's the game absolutely... one at 8 o'clock kickoff. Absolutely insane.
Crazy. It is crazy. But at least they've been a little bit kinder to Gateshead on their.
Oh, God, don't get us wrong. I'm absolutely all for it, but it's one of my big bugbears. I remember rightly at the time they cancelled the Crystal Palace Brighton game because of the train strike. Absolutely shameful. Shameful. But anyway, enough of my gripes. Go on.
No, I think you make a good point. I mean, it's something that we've complained about most of the season. You know, the kickoff times have been absolutely mental. And I mean, we go into another game now with a 12:30 kickoff. And I mean, it is ludicrous. It is absolutely ludicrous, these kickoff times. But it's because it's at the behest of TV. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
I hate it. And you know what really annoys us is you get some of the fans go, oh, it's a crap atmosphere. Yeah, it's 12:30. Most people have got up, had a fry up on a Saturday, or is that just me? Most people have got up, had a fry up, cup of coffee, and then go straight to the match. You haven't gone to the pub beforehand. You haven't got people, and I'm not saying we're getting tanked up or anything, but you haven't had a couple of pints beforehand and gone in there a little bit jolly, looking forward to it, and everyone's buzzing. It's like it's quite a cold atmosphere. I mean, the West Ham game was an exception because of the events on the pitch. Now, yes, the events lead to the atmosphere. Don't get me wrong, they go hand in hand. But sometimes you can go in buzzing a bit more. That's why the nighttime games at Newcastle are always great. You know, 9 times out of 10, you always have a good atmosphere because it's late on, you've got the lights, it's dark. 12:30 is just so awful. It's so crummy. So, I'm not a fan of it. I know the Liverpool fans complain about it because apparently they're the team who've been hit the most with regards to a 12:30. But if Newcastle have to play 12:30, why can't we make it when we're playing Brighton? You know, so the fans can actually get home. You know what I mean? And then actually get a train home, you know, rather than bloody 8 o'clock at night. Something stupid. So it's just badly judged by Sky or whoever the football channel is. It just needs to be balanced out and the fans have a little bit more or just some consideration, because I'm not sure that they actually get any.
So. Yeah. I've got to look ahead to the game with you. Spurs, of course, we face at home, but I just want to go back to what Ange Postecoglou said. I thought it was a refreshing interview from a manager when he was asked about finishing fourth place and the battle for fourth place with Aston Villa. He says, I haven't read the competition rules, but my understanding is that we're not just battling for fourth place at this stage. And I tell you what, it was It was a great question, and it was a great answer. And the journalist kept pushing him and pushing him, and he did turn his attention really to Newcastle. He used Newcastle as a way of highlighting the situation, in the sense that he said, you know, what's great about finishing fourth, you know? He said, because he says next season there's more pressure on you to finish third or to finish second or to finish first. He said, look at Newcastle. He said they've had an injury hit season, and he said, you know, that they're not anywhere near fourth place this season. So from their position, it's a downward turn for them. Has it benefited Newcastle? Was his point. And he was talking about FFP as well and how that's affected things. But I thought it was a good interview by Postecoglou at the weekend.
No, I thought it was very fair, and I thought it was balanced. I thought he came across really well. He comes across well. I thought it was a very fair assessment, actually, in terms of what he had to say. He wasn't out to turn. He spoke very favourably of Eddie Howe as well in it. So yeah, no gripes from me with regards to him. He plays nice, quiet football as well. And Spurs will be in the same boat next season, because I think their squad depth's no better than ours. In fact, I would argue there's an argument our squad's probably slightly better than Spurs. So I suspect they'll have trouble next year should they qualify for Champions League. Mm. And it's not guaranteed yet either, is it, that there'll be five teams yet? I think you literally have to hope that Man City win the Champions League, realistically, because they are a little bit behind.
Yeah.
Through us getting knocked out in Man United, getting knocked out in the earlier stages.
We're pre-recording this on Monday, so it is a bit strange to be giving you breaking news, which you'll have now known for a couple of days. But Everton have been given another 2-point deduction for the breach of PSR rules. The penalty for 3-year cycle, the 22-23, follows the 6-point deduction for previous cycle. So Everton dropped one spot to 16th, 2 points above the relegation zone, 7 days to notify if they intend to appeal. So that's from David Ornstein at the Athletic. So it's another 2 points for Everton.
It should be more. You know, I think they've got away with it really lightly. But then again, you could argue on the other side of the case here is that they shouldn't be getting punished at all if they've got no real debt and they're financially within their means. And it should be the likes of Manchester United and Spurs, who are £1 billion overdrawn, who should be getting punished. The rules are all messed up, I think is the polite way of saying it. So I have got sympathy with Everton fans with regards to that, because I think it's wrong. But if you're going to apply the rules, then apply them properly. 2 points. Well, Forrest got told that the minimum was 4 points. So how have they got 2 points? How does that work? Mm-hmm. I don't understand. I don't think anybody understands what the rules are. They're just throwing a set of numbers up in the air and catching them. Or are they a bit worried that the Everton fans will kick off? Because they're going to fall foul again in September if the rules remain the same, because they're so far in debt again this financial year. The whole thing is absolutely knackered and needs a massive, massive review. And in terms of the way that they do PSR, is that what they call it?
PSR, yeah.
It's just wrong. It's unfair. I appreciate they talked about this new wealth tax thing that they're going to possibly bring in, but they won't, because it'll be done to a way that meets UEFA criteria. And therefore, if they follow the UEFA criteria, you can only spend a certain amount based upon your income. Again, that's going to pressure every other club under those big six earning clubs. And it's going to be then down to us to try and get more and more income into the club. And don't get me wrong, I'm all in favour of that to a certain point. But there needs to be a sort of balance off to those clubs to have the opportunity to be able to grow. And I said this last week, the likes of Villa, the likes of Newcastle, and whichever other clubs want to be able to compete. It's all wrong. And therefore, you know, 2 points, I'm just going back to the 2 points. I thought it was going to be at least four. I thought it was going to be at least four. 2 points seems nothing. And therefore, Everton are safe, really. They aren't. They ain't going to go down, you know, as much as I'd like to see it happen. It's just wrong. It's just wrong. I think the whole thing is absolutely stinks and needs changing and addressing. Because if clubs are therefore stopped from being able to spend money that they've got, And my last point there, Steve, is I've already stipulated I don't want to see Newcastle going in and buying the league. I don't want to see us Newcastle's going, no, we're going to spend £1 billion this year and another load of money next year. I want to be able to live within the means, but they should also be given the opportunity to give themselves a helping hand. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the problem. Clubs aren't allowed to give themselves a helping hand up first, you know.
You say they're safe, right? But listen to this for a set of fixtures, right? Monday, the 15th of April, Chelsea play Everton. 21st of April, Everton play Notts Forest. 24th of April, Everton play Liverpool. Then Everton play Brentford on the 27th. Luton versus Everton is on the 3rd of May. And then the final game of the season, Everton versus Sheffield United. What a set of fixtures that is. It really is.
I'm getting 7 points there, and I think that'll be enough.
Every single team, though, that they play, with the obviously Chelsea chasing, you know, a European spot, Liverpool still chasing the league. The rest of the teams are all around them. Sheffield United are done and dusted, I think.
Yeah.
But Forest, Brentford, and Luton all still have a chance of staying up by the time they play those games. It's a hell of a running, exciting running, definitely is.
It is an exciting running. I think Luton will stay up because they score goals.
Yeah.
And I think Forest might be the team that falls. Because I think Brentford will stay up now. They've got Tony who's banging goals in.
They dropped him yesterday.
Yeah, which we had. He must have an injury. That's the only thing I can imagine.
Didn't look happy. And I think he's saying a lot of things. And I think maybe he's, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe he was injured, but something didn't ring true about that. But there's always a team that drops like a stone, and I was really surprised to see Brentford be that team. But Newcastle face Spurs 12:30 this Saturday live on TNT Sports. A bit early for team news as we're pre-recording this show, but on the road this season, Ange Postecoglou's side have won 6 times. They've drawn 6 times, and they've lost just 3. 3 games they lost were at Wolves, Brighton, and Fulham. 3 of the last 5 away games have ended in score draws, and they've scored at least once in all but one of their last 15 Premier League games away from home. So, Sid, prediction, how do you see this one going?
I think it'll be a draw. I think it'll be a draw. 2-2 is going to be my prediction. We have to come out the blocks a little bit quicker than we did in the last home game. The last away game. I can't see us not conceding, unfortunately. They're a good team. They are a good team. He plays well. The one benefit we have got is pace, because they play such a high line. We've got 3 guys who can bomb through the middle or down the sides and break that high line that he tends to play. And he's adamant to stay to it. He doesn't seem to have a plan B, does he? He's literally, the players are bang on the halfway line. And if you've got somebody who can just break through and get through it, then we're in. We could murder them if that were the case. But I don't see it, because I think technically they've got some very, very good players. Obviously, they've got Madison, who's a terrific player. And they've got 3 or 4 other very, very good players. But a draw. I see it as a draw. I do. I see it as a 2-2. I think, again, part of it being that crummy time of past 12, not helping. But I think they're a good team and an organised team. My outside bet as well is for him to be the next Liverpool manager.
Oh.
I believe he's a Liverpool fan. So
right. Okay. Yeah.
So that's my bet. You know, I'm putting it out there. I don't bet, by the way, but apart from the golf. But he would be my outside bet as the next Liverpool manager. I think he'd probably do a good job. And I think he's got the bottle to take it and think he could do a better job than the previous manager.
Good stuff. You heard it here first. That is Talk of the Tune. Thanks to Rob and to Sid for today. Look forward to seeing you next week. Take care, mate.
Take care, folks. Look after yourselves.